The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
XM Channel 80, your smart speaker, wherever you get your podcast. Look at this. I'm going to do a little adjusting right on air. Okay. See myself in the screen, and now I'm at the proper height. I look very handsome in my here on ESPN Plus, in my tie undone and my shirt collar unbuttoned. See me projecting an after work kind of vibe, which in fact is what's going on. Haven't gotten off of First Take. Now, Raj, I do a radio show. I do an MMA hit for YouTube after this, Raj. I have a conference call about my boxing show, Max on Boxing, coming up.
Oh, it must be so hard being rich.
It is very hard being rich. Also, I'm going to my best friend for I don't know how many decades now has a movie premiere out tonight, produced Old. You know that movie Old, Shyamalan?
Yeah. I want to see that.
Yeah, my buddy Steven Schneider produced it, and going to go check that out tonight. Look at this.
Awesome.
Like a jet-setting life. It's the first time I've left the house in 2 years. As Larry David said, Raj, nothing good can ever come from leaving the house. You can't leave the house. 888-SAY, what's that?
I beg to differ.
Yeah, I know. I see you everywhere, shooting off fireworks, blowing your fingers off. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Is the NBA Finals over? Is the series over? Because that's what I keep hearing. Momentum. The Max Kellerman Show, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. First, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. The series is not over. I don't just mean literally. I used to get into this with John Ireland all the time on ESPN LA Radio. Mason and Ireland, great show, institution in LA. And Mason and Ireland will argue about this because Mace will be like, it's a must win. And John will take it literally and say, no, it's not a must win because, like, literally it's not a must win. But the whole point in saying must win is you're being hyperbolic in a way in order to drive a point home. No, literally, of course, for the Suns, Game 5 was not a must win. But a lot of people felt it was because they felt if you lose two in a row, you're going to lose that third one or three in a row. You're going to lose that next one. You've lost the momentum, and now you got to go on the road. All I know is that the Suns and the Bucks played two very close games where one possession either way could have decided the game, and it took all-time great plays. Think about how many bigger blocks have there been in finals history, at least more iconic. One, maybe, LeBron's chase down block, which wasn't even as skillful a block as Giannis's. And how many alley-oops in finals history are comparable, at least in the public's imagination, to the Drew Holiday to Giannis alley-oop last, you know, in Game 5? How many in history? Maybe one, Shaq to Kobe in 2000, or is that 01? I'm forgetting. Like, it took plays like that that people will remember forever in order to beat the Suns by a single possession. That means the games could go either way. And consider Chris Paul had to turn the ball over a billion times in order for that to happen. Can the Suns win? Yes, of course. This idea of momentum, you know what that's for? Let me tell you a story. In prehistoric times, cavemen, what we found is in caves that cavemen, you know, Neanderthals used to live in, we found paintings on the wall, early, primitive paintings. And what we see sometimes are bears, paintings of bears. What are they doing painting bears on the walls of caves, right? Well, it turns out these Neanderthals, and yes, it's pronounced, I'm going to be annoying, it's not Neanderthal, it's supposed to be pronounced Neanderthal. And since I studied this in college, I annoyingly say tall instead of thal. You're going to have to deal with it. These Neanderthals painted bears because they shared the caves with like 9-foot bears, right? Who sometimes would just snatch one up and eat them. So it's kind of like, why do baseball players get so superstitious? Why do people OCD? Why do they have obsessive compulsive disorder? They have to order, they have to stack the paper just a certain way, open and close the window. Because in a world that feels chaotic, in which you don't have a lot of control, you do things in order to give you a sense of control, right? That's why they painted the cave. They're trying to control the bear somehow in their own imaginations to make themselves feel better because it felt chaotic to them, obviously, and dangerous. Same thing, OCD, you know, like you, because the world feels chaotic, you got to order it somehow. So pundits and the punditry around NBA finals from not just media, but also fans, even sometimes players and coaches, when it feels like you don't have, like it's difficult to say what's going to happen. Even when once you analyze it, you go, yeah, but some of this is, who knows, it's a 50-50 type thing. We start relying on stuff like momentum. When you start hearing momentum, usually what that means is the person doesn't know. And so you're going with like the last thing you saw. We just saw the Bucks twice. Now, if you want to say the Bucks have the momentum because Chris Paul's not right now. There's something going on, whether it's lingering effects of COVID, a COVID fog, whatever, whether it's ligaments in his hand, there's something, whether it's just at his size, you know, by this time in the season, he's always going to be beaten down. And maybe that's why he missed the series with the Rockets against the Warriors in 18. And maybe that's why this is happening now. Maybe. But Chris Paul's not right. If you want to point that out or point out the Haberstroh, Tom Haberstroh tweeted this out today. You know how many field goal attempts Devin Booker has in the fourth quarter of this series so far? 24. You know how many assists he has in the fourth quarter of this series so far? Zero. So it's predictable. He's going to get the ball and try and play hero ball, especially with Chris Paul not 100%. And as a result of that, you know, they play team defense and then Drew Holiday's there to strip him because he's predictable. Well, okay. If you want to say the momentum is based on that, it all starts with Chris Paul not physically being right or being having lingering effects of COVID or being emotionally exhausted, whatever it is, then you have a point. But if it's simply that, well, I saw the Bucks gut two out, and that really gutted the Suns. Now the Suns, the Bucks have the momentum. What does that mean? That in the moment of truth, the Suns are just going to hang their heads and feel like, oh, shucks, we can't hit this three because they got the momentum. We're not supposed to win. No, that's just what people say because it's a very hard series to predict. And the last two games have come right down to the wire and required superhuman all-time great plays by the Bucks to win them by a possession. The Bucks are one game from being NBA champs, though. They became the fourth team in finals history to go down to 0-2 and then win the next three. That's the first since the 06 Miami Heat. Now, here's the question about Chris Paul. And on ESPN Plus, you see his regular season versus postseason numbers. And until this series, like, let's just face it, against Denver, Chris Paul played the best basketball of his career, of a first ballot Hall of Fame career. He was amazing against Denver. And then, after missing those games in COVID protocol to, you know, in the Western Conference Finals against the Clippers, and then coming back and kind of not playing that well, when it mattered most in Game 6, he had one of the greatest games of all time to put him in the finals. So his play here in the finals, something's not right. It's physically he doesn't look right, and mentally he doesn't look right. And what's on the line for Chris Paul right now? I can't overstate this. Remember, I said if Chris Paul had lost Game 6 in the conference finals, I spent time on this show talking about this, and then they'd lost in Game 7, that would heavily count against his legacy, just as the fact that he played so well in Game 6 elevated his legacy. This is a zero-sum game. Sports is the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. This is not a rom-com or a soap opera. All conflict resolves in a relationship where everyone wins. Sports programming is winners and losers. Well, you can't boil down a whole legacy to one moment. That's true. You can't. He is a great player and a future Hall of Famer, and that's undeniable. But whether he's ever a champion, that matters. It puts him in a different category, and it depends on his play right now. We were asked on First Take today, one word to describe Chris Paul. Should he go on to be eliminated in Game 6 or 7? And the word I chose was tragic. Because the real definition of tragic is not just that it's sad. It's that a heroic figure, a character, a hero, is destined for that sadness based on some fatal flaw. In Chris Paul's case, it may be his size. Because in a sport that selects out for height, because the basket's 10 feet in the air, almost never, almost never has the best player on a championship team been under 6'4". Almost never. What about Steph Curry? He's 6'3", and the only reason he was ever the best player on a championship team is because LeBron James's two best teammates were both hurt. Otherwise, Steph would never have been the best player on a championship team ever. Isaiah Thomas. And the situation has to be just right, too, right? Like, Isaiah's in a league. The Bulls don't have a team yet. Kareem's not there anymore. Certainly not as Kareem, right? Like, all the things have to be just right for Isaiah to get two. And that's one of the reasons he's a top five all-time point guard. So maybe it's that Chris Paul's size, by the time you get this deep into the season, even though it's virtually impossible for that guy to be the best player in a championship team, he can almost do it, but the exertion means that by now, something's going to fall apart. He got hurt against in the Houston Golden State series. He's hurt again now. And maybe that's the fatal flaw, just his size. But I would say that if that's the case, it will end tragically in the sense that a guy who in every other way seems like a championship player will never win a championship. Should Chris Paul not come through in Game 6? That was Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. You know what that sound means? Hoops with Dr. Dre, Andre Snellings, ESPN NBA senior writer. Oh, we're going to talk about NBA Finals with my was going to say good friend, my good antagonist, Dr. Dre. What's going on, Dre?
Ooh-wee. Guess who's back? I would say you're my good friend. You know, we the best of frenemies.
So, Dre, I'm talking about this idea of momentum. And a lot of times I was likening it to like obsessive compulsive disorder or superstition in baseball, right? That it exists because the universe is chaotic and we're trying and we feel insecure as a result and we try to create some order in our own minds. And I think the idea of quote unquote momentum for pundits and for fans and even times for players and coaches has to do more with that than actual analysis, right? We don't know who's going to win. It's anyone's series. And because of that, we just like the last team we saw winning. So we say they have the momentum. Does momentum exist? Do the Bucks have it?
I mean, well, so what you're describing is recency bias. And by the way, that Neanderthals example.
Yeah.
Wow. Like you went deep on that one. I was feeling that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're talking about recency bias. The last thing you saw is the last thing that you remember. I don't believe, especially in the NBA Finals, in momentum on that level. As you know, as we all know on here, I picked the Bucks to win a long time ago. And coming into this series, I wrote that if Giannis were healthy the whole time, I would pick the Bucks in six. So I believe that the Bucks should win this game in six. Do I believe it's over? Of course not. And momentum, none of that. You know, it's just at their best, the Bucks at their best are better than the Suns at their best.
Do you think so? Because the Suns haven't had Saric.
I think so. Well, but I mean, the Bucks also haven't had Dante, DiVincenzo.
Yeah, and although DiVincenzo might not even be starting right now. Who knows?
Well, I mean, he should be because it changed the way they played. He gave them more perimeter. They've been off-balanced in these playoffs starting against the Nets because they were too reliant on bigs. And and that was kind of why Giannis was playing more out top. That was the way they played last year.
No, like, by the way, I chose DiVincenzo as like the player to watch that no one's talking about or some topic like that
exactly.
We did on First Take because he could have been a difference maker, but, you know, he's been hurt.
Yeah, I mean, he's been hurt, and when he went out, they brought in P.J. Tucker, who used to play center for the Rockets, and he's not a creator. And so that pushed the ball back into Giannis's hands to create more when, as we've seen, they're better when their perimeter players are creating and Giannis is either in the dunker spot or coming up and setting the pick and rolling to the rim. So, I do agree that Sarge being out is noticeable, but I don't think that it's any bit. I think DiVincenzo's absence has been really big this playoffs.
I'm talking to Andre Snellings, ESPN NBA senior writer, here on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. Now, Giannis has shown up every game. And as much as, like, analytics types or coaches may bristle at the idea that, like, well, he can simply impose his will. No, there are different reasons for that. It's the strategy of the coaches. It's the positioning of the players. Are they building a wall or not? As you said, is he initiating the offense every time? Or is he in a dunker spot? What's going on? But Dre, I think if a guy shows up in like a dozen consecutive playoff games and does what Giannis is doing, that you must credit the player for imposing his will, particularly an interior player. You know, when he's taking it strong the way Giannis is doing, he's really doing something. And it's impossible to ignore the fact that Middleton has also stepped up in crucial situations, as has Holiday, especially on the defensive end. When you flip it around to the Suns, the reason I favored Phoenix, they had home court, but also they have this dynamic backcourt of guys who can make good decisions with the ball and hit clutch shots and seem to work well together in CP3 and Booker. But Dre, CP3 has clearly not been himself. And I mentioned Haberstroh's stat, 24 field goal attempts in the fourth quarter of these finals, zero assists. Is this, what do you see from especially Phoenix's backcourt, and how do they turn this around?
Yeah, so there was a lot in what you just asked. Yep. Rapid fire going through. Yes, Giannis is always there, and that's what makes him a megastar. We talked in the last time I was on here about how Chris Middleton can be a star sometimes, and then he's not there other times. Mm-hmm. Jrue Holiday is a great defender all the time, but his offense is there sometimes, it's not there other times. What we haven't talked about is the same is true of the Suns. Like, Chris Paul at this stage of his career and Devin Booker are both great players, but they're great players. They're not MVPs. They're not, you know, always going to be at that max level. And the fact that max level, no pun. Mm-hmm. The fact that Giannis is able to do that and stay there consistently throughout the playoffs is part of the reason why he's such an elite player, and he's the best player in this series for that reason.
Right, he's a 5-star player. Chris Paul's a 4.5-star player. That's how it is. He's a perennial MVP candidate. Chris Paul is a once in a while MVP candidate.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned imposing will, and while you were talking about it, you mentioned the wall, and I think that's really important. This year, Giannis and the Bucks have been able to work around the wall. It can be because he's gotten better at it. You know, he's learned from the past. It can be because they brought in Jrue Holiday and Chris Middleton, and they're able to work around it. But that wall is part and parcel of why Giannis is always putting a monster impact on the game. Even when they were losing these last two seasons, the opposing team is putting 3 and 4 players into that wall. So if he had sufficient support that could take advantage of it and a plan to take advantage of it, they should be winning those games, even if his own numbers don't look so brilliant.
Well, Middleton was there for the wall when it worked against Giannis, and Brogdon was there, although Brogdon hurt in those plays. But the point is, he had guys with him then. I think the difference this year, Dre, is that Budenholzer spent part of the regular season putting the ball in Jrue Holiday's hands, not having Giannis initiate all the time, and losing some of those games so that they would be ready for this. And to give him credit, they appear ready.
Yeah, that's huge. And he was able to do that because he saw how things had happened in the past. And the wall was different those 2 years, right? The Raptors, when Brogdon was there, that was the first time that I think that the Bucks had seen that. And the Raptors had, like, a defensive gold mine in the front court.
Yeah,
so
it
just really worked out well for
size,
them.
Size, talent, everything, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the Heat were able to replicate that in part because Brogdon was gone and Bledsoe wasn't able to do enough. And that's why when me and you were arguing about this back in like November, I was saying that Jrue Holiday was the key piece. I wrote that before when Holiday was on the Pelicans on ESPN. I wrote an article that said if the Bucks trade for Jrue Holiday, he could be the piece that puts him over the top because he's able to help on the perimeter the way that we're seeing. And so with him and Middleton together, especially, one or the other is typically able to do enough to ease pressure when they build that wall. And we're seeing the result.
But Dre, the fact is, I hear you, and I hate being the guy to rain on everyone's parade. They don't sniff the finals if the Nets stay healthy. Like, even with even with KD by himself, he had a decent look from three to send them packing in overtime of Game 7 by himself. Like, you know, if the Nets were healthy, this is a 5-game series. You know, if the Nets were totally healthy, at best a 5-game series. Same thing with the Suns. If the Lakers or Clippers or just have their star players, the Suns get smoked. Like, they would have gotten knocked out in the first round and then get knocked out again in the conference finals had the other team simply been healthy. So, yes, you're right. Like, Middleton and Jrue Holiday can put them over the top. in a funky injury year, they can do it. But that's why, Dre, but I want to focus on the Suns, okay? Because I know what your counter is. You've made it very well in the past. Look, injury's part of the game. Kyrie's frequently not available. Harden was fat and out of shape. This is what happens. I'm not, those are valid points. What about the Suns' backcourt before you get out of here? What do CP3 and Devin Booker have to change? Because they got to change something in order to get a Game 6 win on the road.
Yeah, you know, as you pointed out, CP3 these last few games hasn't looked right. You know, there have been rumors about his health. The last game, he was really struggling, but he had a big finish and ended up with 20 and 10. He has to be what he was in that, you know, in that late rush for an entire game. He has to really be what he was at the end of the last series in game one, the maestro. He has to be the one that's controlling the action. You point out that, you know, for as great as Devin is, he's not a creator, especially in crunch time. They need CP3 for that. And they have to maintain consistency. Like each of the last two games, they've had periods where they look to be in control, and then they just kind of went away, and the Bucks were able to just keep grinding and come back.
Yeah.
The Suns have to be at their best and maintain it throughout the whole 48 minutes in order for them to have a legit chance to send this back to Phoenix.
And Devin Booker, Mini Mamba, all that stuff, it's the best and the worst of Kobe. He has that Mamba thing where he wants to kill you in crunch time, and he frequently will. But also that thing where it becomes predictable. You know he's going to shoot it. And you got to take a page out of Michael Jordan's book. One of the most iconic shots in the history of basketball is Paxson's shot. Paxson wasn't a star or the second best or third best player on the team. He was a shooter who was open, and MJ got him the ball. And Devin Booker, to me, has got to be thinking like that. Of course you want to kill him like Kobe, but find the open man if you're covered and he's – if you got three guys on you, someone's open. The great Andre Snellings, ladies and gentlemen, Raj and Brendan Wisely, clicked them off for me before I could say goodbye, or we would have talked for an extra 5 minutes. And had no time in the next segment. You're finally learning. Raj, Brendan, I'm proud of you. It's like your bar mitzvahs today. This is the Max Kellerman Show coming to you. And then call Andre Snellings and apologize for cutting him off. That was rude. This is the Max Kellerman Show coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. Coming up, not everyone thinks Matthew Stafford to the Rams is a good idea. Friends, demand for unskilled workers is sky high, but who wants that life? There's demands for hundreds of demand for hundreds of thousands of IT and cybersecurity professionals in the U.S. And My Computer Career is training people to meet it. Get skilled. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation. You can start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. Through July, grants covering up to 53% of the cost are available to those who qualify. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also on Sirius XM Channel 80. You think the series is over? 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. I don't. I think the Suns are a 50-50 proposition to win Game 6. Look, the last two games came down to the wire. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Not only did the last two games come down to the wire, it took two iconic plays, one at the end of each game. Unlikely and iconic plays, historical plays, for the Bucks to win, combined with the Bucks shooting, like, they were shooting the lights out from three. They normally don't shoot as well as they shot in Game 5. Matthew Stafford is the new man in L.A. Rams acquired him in that trade for Jared Goff. Goff, former number one overall pick, a two-time Pro Bowler and NFC Championship winner, who, you know, quarterbacked a team that went to the Super Bowl. He was traded along with two firsts and a third for Stafford. Now, you can say, well, they really wanted to get Goff out of there. He's not seeing eye to eye with McVay. You can say, well, you know, Stafford had a team-friendly deal. Goff had an expensive deal. And so the draft compensation partly addresses that. But bottom line is, two quarterbacks were traded for each other. Only one of the quarterbacks was traded along with two firsts and a third. Right? That means the other quarterback is much better. He's considered much better. Stafford is considered better than Goff. And Goff took him to a Super Bowl or was on a Super Bowl team. What does that mean with Stafford? Right? Anyway, doesn't bother 49er safety Jimmy Ward, who told SI.com, and I quote, he's the same quarterback who was on the Detroit Lions, and they still didn't go to the playoffs, and they had Megatron Calvin Johnson. What was the problem over there in Detroit? They went and traded Jared Goff, who went to the playoffs several times, went to the Super Bowl. I've yet to see that with Matt Stafford, and I'm saying he's still great. I believe he's a top 10 quarterback, maybe top 5. I don't know. We'll see. Stafford has not been considered top 5 in a while. He was at one point flirting with top 5 status, but that was based on talent earlier in his career. You know, the recent guy who I'd say is an interesting comp with Stafford is Justin Herbert. The way, you know, Stafford wasn't the number one guy, but you looked at the talent, you said that's top 3 to 5 talent. Like Herbert now. He's not Mahomes or Rodgers, but who else is more talented than Herbert? Those guys are. Who else? He's a top 3 to 5 talent, Herbert, right? And I would say Stafford is his floor. In other words, if things don't pan out, he'll be in a bad situation on teams that really require on his late game heroics to get wins and otherwise can't really make playoff runs. But we're going to find out now what it's about. Is there something about Stafford where he can't lead the team to victory in the playoffs? Or is it really just a function of being on the Detroit Lions? We're going to find out. I think, you know, I don't know how much I'm kind of affected by the fact that, I don't know, maybe I lack imagination. I haven't seen Stafford in that position, so I don't believe in him, right? And it's hard nowadays to picture teams winning a Super Bowl with just a quarterback where you're like, I don't know. But then I think, well, wait, let's say Stafford does it for a second. How am I thinking of Stafford now? All that talent plus a Super Bowl, plus he's on the Rams, who should challenge every year with a good quarterback. Oh, now we think of Stafford totally differently. Like, let's not forget, John Elway wasn't John Elway for a while. It was like, oh, he's this great talent on these Denver teams, but they could never win the Super Bowl. Until he went back-to-back in the last two seasons of his career. Now we think of him not just as a talented, but he not quite. No, we think of him as, you know, people who are, some people argued until recently, maybe the best ever. So my whole perception would change of Stafford if he won. But because he hasn't done it yet, and maybe I lack some imagination, I think it's possible he'll win a Super Bowl. But would I bet on it? I don't think so. I think if you're asking me, will he do it or not, I can't just assume that he will. When it comes down to it, if two loaded teams meet, and on one side of the ball I see Stafford, on the other Rodgers, I like the side of the ball with Rodgers. I like the side of the ball with Brady. I like the side of the ball with Mahomes. But again, maybe, you know, that'll change. And let's put it this way: what's a win and what's a loss for Stafford this year? If he makes the playoffs, he hasn't done anything yet. He gets bumped in the first round. People are like, you were doing better than that with Goff. If he wins a playoff game, it may be a push, but if anything, that's a bit of a disappointment. I think for Stafford to not hear it from everyone, he's got to win 2 playoff games this year. If he wins 2 playoff games this season, people can say, okay, we're rolling. If he loses in the first round, it's going to be a problem. If he wins a single playoff game, people are going to want more. I think the expectations are so high, he's going to have to win 2 playoff games this season in order for people to say, okay, you still haven't done anything, but okay, we're not panicking. 888-SAY-ESPN. Shammai, is that right? Is it Shammai in Connecticut? Is that who I'm talking to, Raj? Shammai, what's going on?
Yes. Max, listen. Is Chris Paul legacy on the line if they don't win this finals?
It depends how. You know, if he plays, here's the problem. I'm going to get into this coming up. But it's the way they lost. And even if Chris Paul hadn't have blundered, and it was a huge blunder, as bad a blunder as I can remember in the postseason by a great player. But even if Chris Paul hadn't have shoved Antetokounmpo when he was in the air, hadn't turned a 1-possession game with 15 seconds left into a likely 2-possession game with 15 seconds left, meaning, hey, you can still tie it and win it versus you have virtually no chance to win. I know it seems like with 15 seconds left, on the free throw line, up three. There are chances, but I don't know. I don't know what the odds are. My guess is it's under a 1% chance. If you're down three and the other team has the ball on the free throw line with 15 seconds left in the game, I'm sure that your odds are under 1%. Right? So if he does something like that again, or if he otherwise plays poorly, it hurts him. It really hurts him. If Chris Paul balls out and his team just loses, what are you going to do? It doesn't help him in the sense that, dude, this was your chance to be a champion, and there were enough games where you didn't come through in the finals. You know, on the other hand, COVID, ligaments in his hand, there are reasons. By the way, Dame said, well, he didn't say he was leaving, but he didn't sound happy either. Going to hear from him next. The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive makes building easy and affordable. Get a multi-policy discount by combining your car, home, motorcycle, commercial, auto, and more. All your protection in one place. Bundle and save at progressive.com.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, also on SiriusXM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776.
Next delivery, that's hit well in the right center field, and that one is out of here. Ohtani hits home run number 34 of the season, a two-run shot. Angels get a little bit closer. It's now 7-4 Seattle.
That's Angels Radio AM 830. Ohtani goes deep again for his 34th home run, and the Angels lost to Seattle. This MLB weekend recap is brought to you by Credit Karma. Visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Credit Karma money. Progress starts here. What's Damian Lillard's future in Portland look like? Also known as Portland. Sometimes I struggle with English. Portland. Portland Trailblazers, Raj. Be ridiculous. You know, for so many years, he was the poster child, Damian Lillard, for the guy who won't chase rings and wants to stay right where he is. Listen to Damian Lillard, then I'll give you my two cents.
If I say that I haven't made a firm decision, that means, you know, I'm not looking in the direction of another team or saying this is what I'm going to do or anything like that. You know, we're not at that point.
Here's the problem with the Portland Trailblazers, okay? They have to – here's how they can succeed. They either have to be run as a top 2-3 franchise in the NBA, or they have to get lucky, or both. The problem is this. They're tucked away in the Pacific Northwest. It's not a big, glamorous market. And so, like, you know, the Lakers are on the West Coast, so they have late games. L.A.'s a big, glamorous market. The Warriors also, West Coast, late games, but Silicon Valley, San Francisco, the whole thing. It's a glamorous market. The Portland Trailblazers are not from a place like that. They're from a metropolitan area, but not a cosmopolitan area. This is not a, you know, a big, important, international, cosmopolitan city. Okay. I'm going to get to why that's significant in a second. Their games start late and no one ever sees them, all that. Okay. They're not a warm weather state, and they're not a no income tax state. So the reason that's significant is players like to play the same reason people like to be in, like, warm weather, and they prefer to keep more of their money, especially in a salary cap league, right? It's only so much money you can make. It's a big number, but still you're capped. So one of the ways you can get more is by playing in a state that doesn't have taxes, and then those home games aren't taxed. Or, barring that, like, you know, the Lakers, or if the Knicks are ever competent enough, you want to play in a big, cosmopolitan, internationally important city, because the sense among players is that you can broadcast your brand from there. Your brand will be amplified. As much as Adam Silver – and I said David Stern, Adam Silver and others talk about, like, how much parity there is in the league, how many different kind of teams win nowadays compared to how it used to be, only a few teams dominating. And that's good. You want all the markets interested. The fact is, as flat as the world has become, right, as interconnected, still a major media market like New York or L.A. can amplify one's brand better than smaller markets can. At least that's the perception with the players, and it's not unfounded. So if you're not going to be a warm weather, no income tax place, a team that plays in a place like that, it helps to be in a big, cosmopolitan, internationally glamorous market, because these players are trying to set themselves up as businesses, as you know, billionaires eventually. Difficult to do that from Portland, I think the feeling is. Anyway, so it's hard to attract another star to Portland, right? You have to get lucky in the draft. You have to make excellent trades. And even then, you can't just be like good, like a top 10 well-run organization. You have to be better than that. Okay. Now, what's the specific problem as it relates to Lillard? I said earlier in the show, the number of times a player under 6'4" in NBA history, at least modern history, like since the absorption of the ABA teams and the three-point shot, you know, we're going back four decades now, whatever it is. How many times has the best player in the world been 6'4" or under? Or the best player on a championship team? Steph Curry in 2015, right, when Kyrie and Kevin Love got hurt. Steph Curry got to be the best player on a championship team. Otherwise, he never would have been. LeBron would have won that year. LeBron won the next year. And then they got KD, and the best player on the team was KD, not Steph, because KD's almost 7 feet tall, and Steph is closer to 6. Basket's 10 feet up in the air. Sport selects out for height. And if you don't believe that's true, what percentage of six-footers play in the NBA is the percentage of the world's population? Almost none. What percentage of seven-footers play in the NBA as a percentage of the world's population? Something like 15% or 10%, some huge number. Selects out for height. You know, if you're short, it hurts you. So Damian Lillard is not tall by NBA standards. And so the odds that he can be the best player on a championship team are remote. Maybe not impossible because he's a special player. But at best, he needs a guy just as good as him, if not a little better. And the issue is, he's one of the 10 or 12 best players in the world. It's not easy to pair him with a guy as good or better than him. You want to put him in Philadelphia with Embiid? It takes something like that. But how are you going to get that guy to Portland? Difficult. He may have to leave. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.